Live. Catch the podcast on kaya959.co.za.
Okay, so it's a brand new feature. It's a brand new year. And what we're going to be doing from now on every Tuesday at this hour is do what really makes me happy. Like, yes, everything else makes me happy, but this makes me really, 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 really happy. It's a book feature. It's my heart is so full. I'm so happy after having dealt with all the problems in the world. Doing this makes me so, so happy. And I'm going to be bringing in different people to help us review books. Every now and then we'll have authors themselves. So we're going to have fun. The idea is for us to enjoy reading again. If you used to read, maybe the last time you read was when you were at school. Who knows? It doesn't matter. No judgment here. It's just for you to connect to reading again, and we will explore all kinds of books. We're not going to be doing non-fiction or fiction only. We'll be doing exploring all kinds of books from all around the world. But first, I want to introduce you to my guest, who I think it's important to introduce him properly before we get into the book. His name is Griffin Shear, and he is owner of a store called Bridge Books. I hesitate because I think this is such a simplistic title, owner of Bridge Books, because Bridge Books in itself has got such a huge, beautiful history. I think now it's in London, but it has roots elsewhere in the city of Johannesburg. Griffin, hello and welcome.
Hi, thank you so much.
Lovely seeing you.
You too.
So good to see you. And let's go back. Let's go back. I just want our listeners to know who you are and how you finally get yourself here, committing yourself to this, should I say, poverty-stricken owner of a book, you know, a bookstore. Who does that? It's only because
crazy people do that.
Who goes into this industry of selling books when there's hardly anything to make? But that's because you are passionate about what you do.
Well, and I think since COVID, what's been interesting is, we used to have the bookstore and then a very small nonprofit. And now it's a bit flipped. We've got a very small bookstore and a much bigger nonprofit. So we're doing a lot of our retail work out of London, like you said. Mm-hmm. And we've moved into the Barbican building. Mm-hmm. Which is a beautiful 1920s Art Deco high-rise across from the old post office and mm-hmm. the old City Hall. So we're running a lot of that work with a bookstore still on the ground floor. Mm-hmm. And upstairs, David Talley, the designer, has taken over the floors above and I believe is opening a fashion school up there. Mm-hmm. So there'll actually be a tour of the building this weekend and some of the neighborhood with Joburg Heritage. And from there, we've been working really hard on library gardens and working to get the city library back open.
Yes.
Which I believe should be happening within the next 2 months or so.
Yes,
it's all coming. So we've put murals in the last few months in library gardens to try and make it more beautiful and also to think about our past, like murals that also think back to the days of censorship and the protest to open the library for everybody. Mm-hmm. We do reading programs. We have two outdoor libraries that we're running in Alex and Soweto. Mm-hmm. So lots of cool things going on every day. Eh?
Lots of cool things, but I want to take us back to how and when you started the idea of Bridge Books right in the middle of Johannesburg, at a time that I think people were thinking, what? Why? You know, don't you have anything else to do type thing? So let's go back there.
Maybe I did not have anything else to do. That might have been part of it. I'd left my job in journalism and I had gone back to Vitz to mm-hmm. do the master's in creative writing. And I wrote my young adult novel, The Golden Rhino. And I couldn't find any South African books. And especially at that time, you know, things have improved quite a lot, I mm-hmm. think, you know, to our great credit.
This is 10 years ago almost.
I couldn't find books for my own kids that mm-hmm. featured any children of color or mm-hmm. that had African stories. And mm-hmm. that situation's improved a lot. Mm-hmm. You know, there's mm-hmm. so much more. And in more languages and lots of beautiful ways, right? Mm-hmm. So I had started walking around downtown Joburg thinking, like, surely there is someone else who is selling books in mm-hmm. the city other than, like, at the shopping malls, mm-hmm. right? And sure enough, there were dozens and dozens of people. And I ended up making this big map of all the booksellers mm-hmm. and trying to connect them, you know, with varying degrees of success to publishers and get mm-hmm. them to sell new South African books. But meeting lots of really cool people who have gotten to be friends and collaborators and co-conspirators and all kinds of things. We just updated our map a few months ago and started posting it around the city. The Love Josie guys helped mm-hmm. us make it beautiful. So as of July, we had 71 bookshops downtown. Mm-hmm. Some of them are enormous, have like literally a million books. Mm. Some of them are really tiny on the sidewalk. Some of them are doing Christian books or school books or fiction. And if you needed to find a Bessie Head or kind of an obscure Credo Mutua, or if you just need, you know, some Danielle Steele for the weekend, whatever it is, a nice Mills and Boone, anything, no judgment at all, as you say, like everyone should read what they want. Mm. It's all downtown within a few blocks. And I think it's says something really amazing about Johannesburg that we don't always think about, because if you think that 71 businesses can stay afloat selling books within a kilometer or two downtown, you know, what does that say? And I've been watching now for almost 10 years. These families have grown. Kids have matriculated. They've gone off to varsity based on people selling books downtown. And what does that say about us as a city? Something great, right?
It does, because somebody's reading these books.
And absolutely.
It's these people who walk through town that you sometimes think don't read.
And I also met the most, it's really forced me to confront my own stereotypes over the years, because one day I was standing with one of the booksellers and this guy comes up, and this is totally me and my own stupidity, right? Mm-hmm. And he looks rough. I mean, just rough and missing some teeth and just rough, you know? And he's looking for a book, and it's like, oh, that's cool. Like, what are you looking for? And he was looking for the Marlon James Story of Seven Killings, which had won the Booker Prize the year before, because he runs a book club out of his home in Orange Farm, and they needed copies of the book to discuss. And I was like, okay, look at me, an idiot. And here's this guy running a book club for Booker Prize winning books out of his house in Orange Farm, which I think just goes to show people are doing all kinds of things. We can't judge, you know, people are books by the cover. Like, there must be amazing stories happening everywhere that we don't always have time to stop and look very hard. Some of the booksellers are really, you know, one of them has been there for over 100 years.
Sure.
You know, his grandfather started that store and now he's running it. And I have a conversation with him once where we were, you know, people love to have this conversation like, oh, no one's reading and what's happened to our literary culture. And he starts that with me and I'm thinking, oh, gosh, not you, though. You've been selling books for 100 years. Like, how can you think that? But what he wanted to talk about was what happened to all of the books in Shivenda, because he used to sell a lot of books to the mine workers who would pass through the CBD coming from Venda, going off to work in the mines, and they would buy books to take with them to the mines. But now people don't do that anymore. They don't need to change buses in the CBD to go to the mines. He's like, what happened to all of those Venda books? And I'm like, I would also love to know, actually. There must be homes all over the country with libraries of books in Venda that we don't even know what they are anymore. And when you dig through his shelves, you just find really cool things. I thought I'd found a copy of Alice in Wonderland in Songa one day, but I can't read Songa, you know, but the pictures were from Alice in Wonderland. And it was like, did someone translate Alice in Wonderland to Songa? Like, that must have been a feat, hey? Like, just the level of effort. But it was Mozambican folklore and fairy tales that someone had consolidated into Songa, and they used the illustrations from Alice in Wonderland because a lot of the stories were about, you know, the hare that would outsmart the other animals and things like this.
Wow.
It's like, how amazing, and where else would you find that? I mean, it's the only place I've seen something like that all these years.
Wow. So you had this program where young people used to come into your store while you were in the city of Johannesburg after school, and just all kinds of things were happening there. Talk to me about, I don't even think initially it was formal, but something happened there.
Some of them all just started coming in because there's not a lot of places to hang out after school, right? And especially places that won't charge you money, which is maybe where I'm stupid. I should be charging people money, right? Then we wouldn't be cash trapped. And sometimes when the library was open, people didn't know that it was for them because they didn't grow up with a library. And no one ever said, hey,
it's okay, come in.
Yeah, it's free, welcome. You know, you belong here. So they would end up at the bookshop and would start reading stories to each other and do story time on Saturday morning. And one of those girls matriculated last year and is, you know, trying to figure out what amazing thing to do next in the world. It's really lovely to watch how people grow and also the confidence that you get from reading, both reading out loud and feeling comfortable with spoken language. And also the way that it can bring, I think, kids together, because in town, you know, it's South African kids, but migrant kids, kids from lots of different language backgrounds. But when they sit around the book and they, even if they can't necessarily read it confidently to start a picture book, they're still telling a story to each other and looking at pictures and engaging and having a laugh. And that's how we start, right? Mm. That's how we learn to read for pleasure, is just by enjoying the experience.
Mm. So those who are listening are thinking, okay, so he said he was at WITS, but surely he's not South African. No, you're not. brought you here?
I was a journalist for a long time. So I was living in this other world. And
from the U.S.?
From the U.S., yes. I'm American. I grew up in a very small town, totally opposite from Joburg. We had 25,000 people. I grew up like literally on a bayou looking at cane fields across the street. And when I was a journalist, I got sent to Zimbabwe at some point in the early 2000s when the MDC and everything was just coming up, you know. And I got deported in 2002. And so I drove down to Johannesburg and stayed here for a few months. And then I ended up getting moved back. You know, they moved us around all the time. Mm. And I nursed this regret for a long time. I really wanted to stay here longer and just thought it was an interesting place and lots of cool, interesting people around. And it worked out later. I ended up in Bangkok, met my ex there and adopted a kid. And then we didn't have gay marriage yet in America, so we couldn't go back home. Mm. And we couldn't stay in Thailand because they didn't have gay marriage there either. Mm-hmm. And coincidentally, a job opened up here and everything worked out well.
And you could get married here.
We could get married here. So we came, we did, adopted another kid. Everyone's been growing and thriving, and the relationship didn't last, but the friendship did. We see each other all the time. We've still got two boys doing well. One's also fully grown now and matriculated and all those things. The other's working his way through high school. And I'm always very grateful to South Africa for that, because they, you know, the country gave us a home when our own countries would not.
Sure. What a beautiful story. So what got you into the love affair with books and reading?
So, I mean, when I grew up, there was nothing around, you know, and it was, I'm sure I have a lot of South African friends who tell me similar stories. You know, we had three TV stations, and I had to sit there and hold the antenna for my dad to get the picture to come through, right, you know? So if we didn't, you know, we listened to the radio, but then if we wanted to be entertained, we had to, you know, we read. And it was really hot where I grew up, like, you know, Durban kind of climate. So it was too hot to be outside sometimes, so I would read all summer. And a lot of my relatives were teachers and librarians, and so we would get books for gifts as well. And it was such a big deal. I remember when I was 5 going to get my library card for the first time. And obviously I'm very old at this point, so like there were no computers. It was handwritten and someone would laminate it, and it was such a special thing. And then you have this power to bring the books home with you. And I was lucky, my grandmother signed me up for a book club that would mail us a book every month.
Nice.
So you would kind of wait at the post box, you know, to see what was
coming in.
And that kind of stayed with, you know, it follows you around. And sometimes I feel like I'm not reading enough anymore. Like, I think we all get easily distracted, you know. Yeah. And I've been doing some academic work. I've been working at WITS on a PhD about the booksellers in town and how informal markets work and how we could do things better to get books to more people. So sometimes I'm reading very academic things that can be tiring. So it's also a pleasure during the holidays to have a chance to read things that are fun and just, you know.
Yeah. I want us to then start and go right into it. So I think we've only got time for two books. So we're going to talk about the books that we've chosen for people to explore and, you know, your pick, and we'll continue tugging at it. Can we start with The Book of More Delights by Ross Gay? What a lovely book.
So charming. And I found the first volume, which was The Book of Delights, a few years ago. And it was during COVID when I discovered it. And he gave himself a challenge for a year to write an essay every day. Yeah. And he's a poet, so he has a very beautiful eye for detail. Yes. He wrote an essay every day about just something that brought him delight. And you can also imagine, like, it was the year when George Floyd and all these horrible things were happening in America, and not every day was a delight, you know.
And in fact, I think to make the point, he says, in the midst of all the trouble in the world, on this one day, he just felt delight, you know, just, and recognized that feeling was, wow, this, I'm feeling something wonderful.
And what I love about it, too, is it's a bit different from, like, keeping a gratitude journal.
Yes.
Because we're all thankful we have shelter and food and all those things.
Yeah.
But to have a delight is to really be able to find some joy in the day.
Yes.
And it could be in the smallest thing.
Yeah.
This new collection, he gave himself the same challenge.
Yes.
And It
starts on his birthday.
Starts on his birthday, yes. Goes to the next one.
Yes.
And sometimes it's just like the things in his garden bring him to light.
I just think the essay, so it's a collection of essays. So it's easy, you know, it's quick. You can get through it very quickly. You don't have to sit with the whole book the whole time.
And you can dip
wonderful.
In and out very easily.
Yeah. And it tackles subjects from the mundane to something really sometimes quite serious. One of my favorites is, I think, is an essay. Now, I have no idea what pages it's on, but if you've got the book in front of you, I think it's an essay on, there is one on, so it just skips my mind. It'll come to me. But the issue here is that he's also quite, he's light but deep. If that makes any sense.
Absolutely. It's a good way to put it because the touch and the writing is very conversational
and
accessible.
Can I have a look so that I know exactly how to find what I'm looking for? Yeah. He's light and deep at the same time.
And he thinks about things in a really...
He's quirky.
...different way, and he'll look at people's dogs and have little cute observations. But cute's the wrong word because he's really thinking hard about it at the same time.
Yeah.
But it's not...
It's not heavy.
Right, it's not like deep philosophy where we're going to leave feeling like, oh, what did I just have to go through? Because for me, I finish each one and I do feel a little bit lighter.
There are two feelings at the end of each essay. It's, that's the feeling I have. I always think, he's so clever, so clever. He's managed to weave into something quite simple, something to think about.
And it's not overly personal, I guess. You know, he's not digging into the details of his relationship or his interpersonal relationships, though he does find delight in his mother as he's a 50-year-old man, reminding him to get his colonoscopy scheduled and feeling like, you know, she had to wipe my bottom as a baby and now she's still checking on it as a 50-year-old man. I find delight in that too, I have to say.
Did any one of them stand out for you?
This one where he's hiking on a trail.
Yes.
And
yes.
He meets this woman who I think we've all met.
Terrible.
Who was very difficult and maybe racist in a very like roundabout way, not being very direct about it.
And bossy.
Bossy
and
just
grumpy,
like,
judgmental.
And yet he could find a delight in the path and that she cared about the space and that I think, well, sometimes if I'm in the park and someone's driving me crazy, I don't always have the grace to be like, she cares.
Yeah.
You know, this person is concerned about all of us having a nice space to be.
And also consider it delightful, which I thought was quite something.
And to not get stuck in the negative part of it, which appeals to my personality too, I think. We don't want to be stuck on only the hard parts, because we all know what those are.
This is the one I wanted to speak about, imposter syndrome. And I think South African, this will resonate with a lot of South
Africans. This one is amazing too.
It speaks of, obviously, but I mean, it deals with race, class, academia spaces, political spaces, global issues, but in such a graceful, subtle manner that you realize at the end, wow, we've just dealt with really heavy issues over, what, 3-4 pages.
And I think, you know, there's a moment in there where he's talking about how, I'm sure it's very true in South Africa too, but that there's very few black academics at his university. So they collectively end up becoming the mentors to all of the black students. And it is sort of an additional workload. And yet to find delight in doing that at the same time. And also in that acknowledging that like so many people have that same feeling of imposter syndrome. And at some point he's trying to teach a class about Uncle Tom's Cabin, which he has proposed himself, right? No one
it's there because of him.
But he has to go to someone to remind him that he is capable of doing it and wants to do it and has things to say about it. And I also found that reassuring because sometimes I look at the things that I try to do in a week and I think, why is it like this? I was like, wait, I chose this. Like, I actually made this world for myself that I'm doing.
It's you.
And to be able to acknowledge that, yeah, sometimes it's a little bit hard, right? Or very hard. But still worth doing. And that we can find joy and delight in the things we've set out, even if it's not the easiest.
I think it's definitely one to look at if you want to just go quickly through the book and find something interesting.
And this one, what was a little bit different from the first volume is he includes a really interesting bibliography, which is such like a nerdy thing to be into.
Yes.
But he recommends all of these books that he's enjoyed reading over the last 5 years that have inspired him in a different way. And I just finished this over the holidays. So now I've kind of made notes on the books that I'm interested in, that he's interested in.
To have a look.
Because I just think his worldview is so intriguing. And I think I might also be inspired by the people that he's gotten something from.
Yeah. So it's definitely, you know, there's everything here. For those who want to talk about A Million Kisses or something, you know, as deep as, yeah.
Or if it's just sweet potatoes.
Oh, you know, exactly.
It could be any little
exactly.
thing.
Exactly. So it's really one to get. The Book of More, in brackets, Delights by Ross Gay. You've got this in store, right?
Yes, we do.
So people can get this. And then this one, The Life of Walata Petros. Incredible woman. Incredible woman from
Ethiopia.
And
I've been looking for this book for years, actually. It came out some time ago in the U.S., but it was a very expensive kind of academic mm-hmm. edition. Now we've got...
Was it Princeton that did this?
Yeah, I believe so.
University.
And it's not cheap by the time you get it here and
really?
Pay the dollars, you know.
Okay.
But now there's a paperback version, and we've gotten copies here. And I've been reading about it. It's been lovely to be able to start reading it.
Mm-hmm.
She was born in the late 1500s, where did her... was living her life in the 1600s, got married off, you know, at a very early age, as mm. I think was probably the case in mm-hmm. many places, and was Ethiopian Orthodox.
Yeah.
And at that time, the Jesuits were coming from Europe and trying to convert Ethiopia
into
to be Roman Catholic.
Yeah.
And it was sort of a, you know, just kind of these like early
colonialism.
Yeah. And the king of Ethiopia decided, okay, I'm going to become Catholic, Roman Catholic,
mm-hmm.
and we're going to stop teaching our own religion, mm. and everyone must convert.
Mm.
And she resisted this, and mm. she left her husband to become a nun. She started teaching illegally their own religion around the country, set up these communities of nuns who followed her. And interestingly and controversially, actually, when the translation came out, because the book was written originally shortly after her death
yes.
in a language I'm not sure how to pronounce. I think it's
yes.
Gays.
Yes, because of the translation, there are things that I'm not sure about myself. Because language is like that. Language sometimes has other deeper meanings and sometimes is not direct. So I have questions. Was she gay?
So that was one of the big things that came up, right? Exactly. Because
oh, okay.
There was a translation
sure.
into Amharic in and into Italian in the 70s.
Yes.
Which Amharic is the contemporary language
mm-hmm.
that most Ethiopians would speak. And they were very upset because when she went digging, she found an old Ethiopian priest to help her find the original text.
Yes.
And in there was the more recent, the other translations that talked about her fighting with the women that were her fellow nuns.
Yes.
And when they went back to the original text, it wasn't fighting, it was really like lustful
yes.
was the language that they used.
And the description of the partner.
Yeah, it was...
The friendship partner something that she befriended.
More.
Somebody, yes.
And I think some people took offense because they thought it meant that she wasn't honoring her vow of celibacy.
Yes.
And the author, the translator, has spoken that, like, that's not what I'm trying to say.
Yes.
What I'm trying to say is she could observe her vows.
Yes.
And yet still feel this attraction
yeah.
that others remarked on and that was part of her life that was important. And I think it's just a very, we see so few representations of queerness of any sort.
Yeah.
In, especially in those pre-colonial
and
periods.
I mean, I think it's a struggle, not just because of a translation, but also... for our heads to wrap our heads around religion and queerness and all of those that people who are usually very religious and orthodox struggle with that.
And I think to be careful about imposing like what we think of as being gay today
yes.
into somebody who was alive 400 years ago.
Yes.
Because the world was obviously...
Very different.
Completely different world.
Mm.
But that I think it's... interesting that her biographer,
mm-hmm.
Who was one of her followers, someone who loved her, you know,
yeah.
who respected her.
Met her, knew her, right?
Yeah. And but felt that this was an important aspect to include
mm-hmm.
and didn't feel any shame
judgment,
or
judgment.
Anything about it,
yeah.
right?
Am I right in assuming, or again, missed in translation, she's a saint now?
So she's an Ethiopian saint,
yeah.
Not a Roman Catholic
yes,
saint, of course.
Yes.
But and deeply venerated. And the reason that the translator found her is because she was reading these old European accounts of Ethiopia from that period, and then found that there were all of these women, not just her, but like a lot of powerful women who were resisting.
Who led it, not just who were at the forefront of resisting colonialism, which is why Ethiopia has never been colonized.
And who were deeply respected and written about. And there are other short biographies, maybe too strong a word, but short accounts of some of the other women's lives.
Yes.
This is the only like full kind of book length account. Yeah. And when you read the language, the way they've translated it, I assume is very faithful to the tone of the original, because it does have that almost biblical storytelling style. And it feels like it's got a, you feel the religion and the religiosity, is that a word? in it, you know, that it is a sacred text in some way. But also that she runs away from her husband and then he tries to get her back and that the king, you know, the king is hunting her down and it's, you know,
I also think there are very interesting themes that run through this point about the husband, who clearly she resents. And I felt, you know, she was, let's call it in brackets, disobedient. Let's call it that for the time. Disobedient to the king, to her husband as well. But every now and then, when their decision is to be made about killing her because she's just too much trouble, he comes to rescue the moment and says, well, you know, please, king, because obviously he's quite influential, can we not renegotiate this, rather banish her or punish her, or let's get the Jesuits to come and try again. But in other words, saving her every single time. So I got the feeling he must have loved her in a very weird way.
Yeah, and I think,
you know,
because if my math is right from the chronology, I think she was 16-ish
when she got married. She was very young.
Which maybe for the time was more common. I'm not sure. But to have been, to have a long life together, you can also imagine that they must be a very entangled relationship too. Mm. Like that they were definitely together in some way. But yeah.
Or maybe, I mean, if it was arranged, he probably had always had eyes on her. In other words, he must have probably been in love with her for longer than she was, you know, in a interesting kind of way, because that's the nature of the relationship and how the marriage was arranged.
And I think that she was able to endure, because, I mean, she lived a full life and lived to be an old age, especially for the time, and outlived the king who was trying to impose Roman Catholicism, and could see, to go through struggle and to be able to live long enough to see change and to have developed a community of like-minded people who wanted to be with her and form communities.
So we're speaking of the life of Wolata Petros, who is, I would call her quite a leading figure, revolutionary really, of her times in Ethiopia. But, you know, I want to ask you, Griffin, whether you feel, because that's a sense, that's what I felt. I kind of felt, you know, even to this day, history never really accounts for people who led a revolution in that way. And of course, often you would say, well, is it because she's a woman? I don't have that answer. But to think that actually it's at that very moment when, of course, I'm sure politically there were other shenanigans there as well. There was money, transactions and all of that. The king was just not religious. I'm sure there was money being exchanged. There were other people who were interested in Ethiopia and getting her killed. It must have been a reason. That someone like that, who's able to sustain the abuse and the terror and all of that, and change a nation's thoughts about the mission of these Jesuits, that's somebody who should be not just mentioned in one book, celebrated in huge ways when you consider that Ethiopia had never been colonized.
And you know, I think that's part of the goal with the translation of the book, was why they spent so much time on it. Because the woman who did the translation had to teach herself the language to do the translation. But so that the stories are more accessible and that we can start talking about them and including them. Because I'm a little surprised that since the first version came out 8 or 9 years ago, I think, of this translation. And it hasn't really caught the popular consciousness the way that I thought it would.
Mm-hmm.
So I kind of hope that like a more affordable paperback is going to be a way to kind of get that discussed more and conversations like this, because I think I did a lot of African history when I was in school, and I was
never
not
came
aware
across
of these
her.
Stories at all.
Never came across her. I may say, to probably respond to why, probably the timing is wrong. There are books that just slip through because the timing is just not right. I have a feeling it's one of those books, unfortunately.
Maybe we need Showmax to turn it into a series and that would help.
Maybe we need to do something like Griffin. Thank you so much for coming. It's absolutely wonderful talking to you. The store is in Linden, Bridge Books. And where exactly in Linden?
On 4th Avenue, just across from Brian Lahr and the Whippet at that corner there, upstairs in the complex. Yeah.
And very quickly, our two selections are The Book of More Delights by Ross Gay, and another book is The Life of Walata Pedros, a 17th century biography of an African woman. Thank you, Griffin.
Thank you.
I'll be back tomorrow at 8.
If you missed it live, catch the podcast on kaya959.co.za.